KGNU Radio now begins its first broadcast day.
For mirrors day. On KGNU.
Classical music.
KGNU.
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 KGNU Boulder.
On KGNU.
KGNU.
KGNU now invites you to enjoy community radio.
For 40 years, KGNU has broadcast eclectic music and news from around the world. But from KGNU's beginning, the lure of an open, all-day schedule, unrestricted by commercial concerns, made space and time for the spoken word. This morning's installment of Flashback 40 is KGNU and the Spoken Word, and features some of the best of the poets, poetry, stories, and variety programs that have entertained and inspired KGNU listeners for decades.
Sonia Sanchez is a poet, professor, race and gender activist, as well as a worker of peace. She has taught at San Francisco State University as well as Temple University. The following was recorded by Todd McCarty on June 17, 2004. Ms. Sanchez was teaching at Naropa University's 30th anniversary summer writing program. Here she discusses the power of words and how one can create personal peace from one's language and actions.
So what we began to understand then simply is that these words that you think are just in books, these words that you think have no effect only that on the page, that I understand truly why Louise Bogan, a woman I studied with at NYU, said to all of us, and we didn't believe her because we were young students, right? She said, you must learn how to read your poetry aloud so you can train your ear to hear whether it works or not, you know. But in reading the poetry aloud, you know, you then take it out of the page, the book. Then she says something else. You must learn how to read all poetry aloud so you can give it out. You can really truly hear it. You would see what it really means, how it works, you see. And what she's saying is that these words are here, they bounce off here in this room, in a classroom, you know, and then they come back into the body. And they heal, they make you feel better, they empower you, etc. And so, yes, in the same way almost, the water in our bodies, you know, hear the words and they respond to them in no uncertain terms. For sweet honey in the rock, I'm going to stay on the battlefield. I'm going to stay on the battlefield. I'm going to stay on the battlefield till I die. I'm going to stay on the battlefield. I'm going to stay on the battlefield. I'm going to stay on the battlefield till I die. I had come into the city carrying life in my eyes amid rumors of death, calling out to everyone who would listen. It is time to move us all into another century. Time for freedom and racial and sexual justice. Time for women and children and men, time for hands unbound. I had come into the city wearing peaceful breasts and the spaces between us smile. I had come into the city carrying life in my eyes. I had come into the city carrying life in my eyes. And they follow us in their cars with their computers, and their tongues crawl with caterpillars, and they bumped us off the road, turned over our cars, and they bombed our buildings, killed our babies, and they shot our doctors, maintaining our bodies. And their courts changed to confessionals, but we kept on organizing, we kept on teaching, believing, loving, doing what was holy, moving to a higher ground, even though our hands were full of slaughtered teeth. But we held out our eyes, delirious with grace. But we held out our eyes, delirious with grace. I'm going to treat everybody right. I'm going to treat everybody right. I'm going to treat everybody right till I die. I'm going to treat everybody right. I'm going to treat everybody right. I'm going to treat everybody right till I die. Come. I say, come, you sitting still in domestic bacteria, come. I say, come, you standing still in double-breasted mornings, come. I say, come and return to the fight, this fight for the earth, this fight for our children, this fight for our life. We need your hurricane voices. We need your sacred hands. I say, come, sister, brother, to the battlefield. Come into the rainforest. Come into the hood. Come into the barrio. Come into the schools. Come into the abortion clinic. Come into the prisons. Come and caress our spines. I say, come. Wrap your feet around justice. I say, come. Wrap your tongues around truth. I say, come. Wrap your hands with deeds and prayer. You brown ones, you yellow ones, you black ones, you gay ones, you white ones, you lesbian ones. Come, come, come to this battlefield called life. Call 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 life. That's the piece that I did for Sweet Honey in the Rock and Bernice Reagan.
Ansem Berrigan.
I know it's an instant movie. Why do you sing to me like I'm you, my gone and dead singer? O train I could run through a shocked public face. Are you not the angry star of your own tomb-filled churchyard? A sky collapsing with love underneath your feet. Savage, brittle torso, tell me about your moral resignation, textured so tightly as to set down a careening archetype of fidelity and mumble a sea of gelatinous futures not in the evident shadow, but in service of its game, a jewelry box spectrally bound with internet valium, your future, your way, lights out forward through time, to arrive and call things by name, as a technician would, determining pain toleration, around a weapons cache, in the home all intimate details are details, the truce creaks, the trawl asks questions, it's too late to escape the dirty clutches of life, onto a dummy raft, practicing kindness trauma with glee, the axe in access twirling to believe.
Currently, you're the artistic director for St. Mark's Poetry Project. For our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about St. Mark's, a little bit of the history, and then address more what it is that you do at the Poetry Project?
Sure. Well, the project was founded in the fall of 1966, officially founded by Paul Blackburn, great and late poet Paul Blackburn. But it was more of a collective effort than that, although he deservedly gets the credit. There were not a lot of places for readings in New York City, and there were regular readings taking place at a cafe on 2nd Avenue called Café Le Métro, which no longer exists. The readings ended there. The cafe sort of kicked the poets out after one overly rambunctious evening, as these things happen. And out of a series of machinations and through the fact that there was some very radical people at St. Mark's Church, the readings were moved to the church. A grant was written to start the project, and it was basically a neighborhood collaboration between the church and the writers around the time, and this would include Ann Waldman, my father Ted Berrigan, Jerome Rothenberg, David Henderson, and a number of other people. It's essentially a community center for poets. It's all poetry, and all kinds of people have read there. Allen Ginsberg was a central figure, and then people like Robert Lowell and Robert Pinsky have read there as well.
Carol Merrill, reading from O'Keefe, Days in a Life, published by La Alameda Press, Albuquerque, New Mexico, copyright 1995. O'Keefe answered my letter. I first visited her one day in August 1973. She hired me to work on weekends as librarian, secretary, cook, nurse, companion from 1973 to 1979. This poetry is from my journals written just a few hours after the experiences. I wrote about 250 poems about those 7 years of time with O'Keefe. The book contains 108 poems from that time. O'Keefe did not like poetry. However, she would listen to Witter-Bynner's translation of Chinese poets in Jade Mountain. O'Keefe often had me read aloud to her from biographies of great people. Many times we reread an ancient Taoist text, Secret of the Golden Flower. I read that whole book to her 4 times. O'Keefe taught me to cook, and she taught me to look, really look at things. She showed me how to live. She let me know her when she faced old age, blindness, and death in the last years of her life. O'Keefe must be remembered. She was a woman of fierce temper, infinite kindness and generosity, and impeccable sense of artistry. Everywhere I looked in her house, there was beauty. And when I left her every weekend working for her, I felt like I had had a shower in beauty. She encouraged me and changed my life as a poet. I like to think of her walking in beauty beneath ancient cliffs at Ghost Ranch, where we walked together. This work is thanks for the strength of her will and the spirit of her work. The letter that she answered was two sentences. Thank you for existing. You give me the courage to continue writing my poetry when no one cares. O'Keefe, Days in a Life, August 1973. The roofless room with vigas and screen, two gigantic jade trees in pots. Against the far wall, a slight niche with huge black rock there. On the whole white wall, a slight shadow, and that rock. O'Keefe's sight so poor, she doesn't see it, but knows it's there. Also, one moonflower plant blooming wide open, and onions drying on screens, fragrance of earth. O'Keefe at lunch, August 1973. The table, her design, patty pan squash and zucchini lightly steamed, carrots cooked in butter and dill, home-baked bread with sunflower seeds, thinly sliced roast beef, chipped ice in glasses with raspberry juice and mint tea. In the center, a large glass bowl with enormous pink hibiscus flower floating with a green sprig of tansy. Good for miscarriage, O'Keefe said, talking of herbs for female parts. In the roofless room, trumpet flower blooming.
You are listening to Subliminal Guild. I'm Agent 3.3, your host for this evening. Tonight, the theme that we are rotating around is the motherless child. Matthew Grindstaff dream journeying with Mother Ghost from his work, The Wild Motel of the Sea.
Dream journeying with Mother Ghost. Dear W, last night I walked with Mother Ghost into the olive groves. She wore the dress from the Frozen Girls painting. I held her hand and it felt like a fish with no bones. From a distance, the trees looked like a weather-eaten secret. They had the aroma of salt crushed into dry lips. Mother Ghost turned to me as wind hit my body. It sounded like dead men cracking jokes in an empty well. It sounded like clots of ash scattering through tall grass. It sounded like a woman throwing off her clothes before swimming in a cold river. It sounded like a lonely woman cleaning fish in a dark cave. I saw Mother Ghost climbing an olive tree. I saw her let her long hair down. I couldn't tell where the limbs stopped and her hair started. Just then the dress flew over my head. I thought, Mother Ghost is naked in the trees. I started looking around for Father Ghost. I didn't want to fight a dead man. I was curious to see what a ghost looked like, unclothed in the water. I shut my eyes. I turned back toward the motel. I knew this was something to write the Hyacinth Girl about. I opened my eyes and walked back. I saw an animal with radiant feet. I saw another with fur covering the spot where its mouth should be. I turned back toward the olive groves, and what I saw made all language tangle and turn to ash. I saw white animals bathe in the cold forest. I saw flowers of the sea circle the little path where the moon had fallen. I saw you, W, walking a blind horse through a grove of ash trees. I saw a man and a woman covered in tattoos. His were of labyrinths, strange chambers and endless mazes. The woman's was of a little girl holding a candle between her fingers like a cigarette. She held it over my motel room where another candle could be seen. I saw rough stones in the shape of a dying man's arm. I saw a baby crawling into a snake's mouth and come out the tail as a grown man. I saw a man with a walking stick eating lightning. I saw another man with a bird mask on and he was looking for the walking stick. I saw a man on his knees in a motel room. He was putting the dress into a suitcase. I saw him pet a thirsty dog, I saw him swimming toward the shore.
And here's the late Martin Coben, whose poetry graced KGNU's airwaves for many, many years until his death in 2016.
Commitment. To retain our way of life, in self-defense we are engaged in war. We make our moves, use tools we need to reach the goals we know we're fighting for. We'll win. The other side will sin, but we'll maintain the rule of law. If need requires, of course, since we must win and aren't fools, we'll change the rules. If what we do as we pursue our goal, our struggle to maintain the rule of law, if what we do and say seems not the same, we'll change the name so we can win. If prisoners of war cannot be treated as we must treat them to achieve our goal, we'll call them something else. Unlawful combatants is the present term. In our commitment to the rule of law, we will hold firm. I'm Martin Coben.
And as rich as KGNU's history of creating space on the airwaves for poets reading their poems, KGNU's 40-year history has also honored the age-old tradition of storytelling. Here's Eric Patterson hosting an October 2005 edition of the KGNU Story Hour.
Welcome to the KGNU Storytelling Hour. Stories are the containers of wisdom. For centuries, they have educated us, entertained us, and most of all, inspired us toward our own true greatness. Dan Overholzer.
My story is, I will never go back there again. In the late 1970s, I went fishing up to Hesse. If you're here in Boulder, you drive west in the mountains to Nederland, and then to a little town called Eldora, and then a little farther up the valley is a place that used to be called Hesse. It's an old mining town. And it's not there anymore. Now, I went up on a weekday, and I was the only vehicle in a parking lot. And to my knowledge, I was the only person in that end of the valley. You know, as I was fishing, I heard all those beautiful mountain sounds where you could hear the wind whooshing through the trees up above me and hearing the mountain stream make that beautiful gurgling mountain stream noise. But there was another noise I was hearing that was very unsettling, and it sounded like a metal pickaxe hitting rocks. A very clear, distinct clang. And then at times I also could hear a shovel scooping up broken rock. And there was something about this sound. It was very unsettling. And I could swear it was coming just directly across the stream from me where I could see there was an abandoned mine. And you could tell this mine, it was the entrance. And you could tell it had been blown closed with dynamite because there was a bunch of rubble and there were some aspen trees growing up out of this rubble. So you could tell it was a very old mine. But, you know, I just thought it was someone else up on the hillside, but I looked and I couldn't see anybody and the sound was, it was worrisome. Well, it became dark and I went back to my vehicle to have a sandwich for dinner. And as I was looking up the sky, there was something to my right that caught my eye. And I looked and it was over where that old mine entrance was. And all of a sudden, there was a blue glow there. And that blue glow, it moved to the right. And then it came back to its original position, and it moved to the left, and then it came back to its original position, and then it came across the creek. And when it came across the creek, it came immediately. It jumped across the creek. And when it came across the stream, I could see arms and legs. I could see a human form, but no head. And then it started to come toward me. It had scared the daylights out of me. I had never seen anything like this. I grabbed my chair, threw it in the truck, and I got in the car and drove away as fast as I could, looking in my rearview mirror to see if it was following me. Now, I've never had an experience like that in the rest of my life. But I can tell you, I will never go back there again.
And we'll wrap up this edition of Flashback 40, KGNU and the Spoken Word, with this improbable March 2007 episode of Radio Avenue.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
Tonight's show is about lies and the lying liars who tell them. Welcome to Denver's Avenue Theater, 417 East 17th Avenue in the burgeoning nether regions between Lodo and Uptown. This is Radio Avenue on KGNU Radio, 88.5 FM in Boulder, 1390 AM in Denver, or heard around the world at kgnu.org. You can also find out more at radioavenue.org. And now, folks, here are your hosts, Bob Wells and Dave Johnson.
Wow. How nice to see you, Dave.
Lou. Lou is the syllable you always sing at a song like that.
Seriously.
Lou.
Is that the truth?
Yeah. Although you may not believe it tonight.
I just don't believe everything that I'm hearing so far. But I'm really glad to see you. That's a lie.
Yeah. We are going to be talking a little bit about lies.
Because lies do affect many, if not all of us, from time to time.
Pretty much all of us, don't you think?
From the top right down to the bottom.
And we'll be finding out, we have some experts here tonight on lies coming up a little bit later, and we'll be visiting with them. We've got an action-packed show.
This edition of Flashback 40 was produced by me, Liz Lane, for KGNU. Stay tuned next month on Monday, May 21st at 8:35 a.m. when Flashback 40 returns on the eve of KGNU's 40th birthday, which is Tuesday, May 22nd, with an oral history of the station. We'll hear stories and reminiscences from some of the earliest volunteers here at KGNU and the tenacious media mavens who dug in and stuck with it and created a community radio station that thrives today, 40 years later. Flashback 40, 8:35, Monday, May 21st. For KGNU, I'm Liz Lane.